Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. The dystopian novel has taken over the young adult scene, captivating readers of all ages as they push societal boundaries in a race to save humanity. In Veronica Rossi's Under the Never Sky, our heroine Aria finds out how humanity subtly mutated in order to survive, and how technology may be a part of her life, but perhaps to the detriment of her existence.
She lives in a very advanced world. It's very highly integrated with technology, very genetically advanced. It's basically kind of like a projection of what I thought our world might be like, you know, a couple hundred years in the future. And one of the main aspects of her world is she spends much of her time in these virtual landscapes called realms. And I envisioned that sort of as a kind of like multidimensional internet. Like if you could actually experience, you know, a website as something that was fully sensory, like you could see it and smell it, and you know, you could basically sort of like Google, let's say, Hawaii and be there and experience it. And she does that through this device called a Smart Eye. And it's sort of this like advanced patch that goes over her eye, and it gives you this sort of like simulated experience of the realms. So it's kind of like just extrapolating from, you know, our experience nowadays with how connected we are with the internet and social media, and her world is basically like an extreme integration of that.
And this world is happening in this enclosed city, Reverie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Yes, the story is set in a post-apocalypse where there are these violent energy storms there's this layer of atmosphere called the ether, and there are these violent energy storms. And what happened was that people needed to take shelter. There's a total collapse of like the social order because of the ether, this apocalyptic event. And people took shelter in these pods. The very fortunate were chosen to live in these enclosed cities. And that is Aria's world. She is a descendant of one of these fortunate people who got admitted into these pod cities. And, yeah, they live a very sheltered and pain-free and safe existence in these enclosed cities.
And their slogan is better than real.
Yeah. That's right.
It's really interesting to me how, I mean, you're talking about the Smart Eye, and it's smart aside from the sense of being able to bring them to whatever realm they want and have them wear whatever they want and be wherever they want, but it acknowledges who it's attached to as well, and she can just,
right,
by thinking about what she wants to sort through.
Mm-hmm.
It appears
mm-hmm.
through this one eye. So she sees real life in one eye and then the projected life in the other.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right, yeah. And I pretty much, I don't know, in the story I call it fractioning. And we're starting to use that term around my house a little bit because, you know, I'll be like texting and talking to my kids, and in the meantime I'm doing something else. And so, well, we sort of do that nowadays, you know, and it's becoming even more so. We have this sort of fractured experience where we're interacting with more than one dimension at a time almost, you know. I mean, we have headsets and we're doing something else. And so, yeah, that's, again, sort of like another extreme of what I see nowadays is this idea that you can kind of like be existing almost simultaneously in more than one place.
The people, I mean, they've been in these pods, and these pods are massive, massive cities where
right,
there are sectors
yeah.
to each of them, where they have trees, where they can grow their food, and they now genetically modify their people. They've been in these pods for so long, so
right.
when a new human being is created, they can say, I want it to look just like this and have this sort of brain power, and I want them to excel at. Well, they really don't need physical strength, though, do they? If they're
well,
there.
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, everything is, you know, it's pretty much automated. It's a disease-free society. They have basically, because it's a controlled environment, they've eradicated disease. And, you know, they've created you know, on the surface, it's pretty much a utopia, you know. You know, as the story kind of progresses, you realize that there's more to it than that, of course. But yeah, they have a very easy life inside of Reverie and in the pods.
We talk about the story progressing, and there is the outer wasteland, which nobody within the pods, because they've been there for so long, can survive because of the air outside. They're not conditioned to it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. The ether is really, you know, it's like the overarching sort of antagonist in the story. And one of its properties is actually that it has like a mutative effect. So in this outer world, there are these very rapidly kind of changing diseases, and you have a society that's been enclosed for a couple hundred years, and they've basically lost the ability to survive and the immunities to be able to survive in the outside world. You know, it's a really terrible predicament for Arya when she's cast out of Reverie.
And there are people living out there. It's such a foreign place, obviously, for the people in Reverie, but also the people within the pods. They're bewildering to what the pod people call as savages.
Yeah, the idea was that these societies would be complete opposites. So that was absolutely, you know, where the fun came for me, was to create, you know, as advanced as this world inside the pods and inside of Reverie was, the fun part was taking it to the other extreme on the outside, where, you know, survival is literally an everyday battle. They're fighting to eat. The outsiders are fighting for control of their land and for power. And so it's a very much like a, you know, Darwinism at its extreme in the outer world. And it was really fun, you know, to get these two characters together that have these different lives and completely different cultures. And that was the fun for me. That was what I set out to do with the story, is just to pit these two very, very different characters together and see what happens.
And this other character is Perry. And
that's right.
Aside from being the brother of a bloodlord who is the leader of that particular clan, he's also marked. Can you tell us what marked is?
Yes. Well, like I was saying about the, you know, about taking this outer society to the opposite extreme, what I tried to do is not just to have, I guess you don't have one population evolving and not have the other. Everything's kind of evolving simultaneously. And so I took this outer population, and instead of just having them be like normal humans, I kind of made them almost like devolve and become more primitive and almost even a little bit more animal-like. And I did a lot of research on genetics, and in, you know, one thing about genetics is that when a population becomes very small, this is what you see like on the Galapagos, you have these possibilities for like these very large genetic shifts to happen very quickly. And so the marked are essentially an example of that. They're people in the outside who have developed these heightened senses through this kind of rapid genetic mutation. And Perry, who is the protagonist, is what's called a Skyer in this story. And I base that essentially on the sense of smell and kind of on that extrasensory perception that you see, you know, sometimes in animals, in a dog that might scent, you know, something off about someone and growl and you don't know quite why. I took that idea and I developed these people called Skyers who can actually scent tempers. And that's basically human emotions. So it's a little out there, but I really wanted a human that was almost, you know, animal in the way he perceived the world, because I thought it would just be this fantastic contrast to Arya, who's basically seeing everything, you know, through the lens of technology and through a very different lens.
It's interesting. I don't want to give too much away, but there is one character, Marin, and he has a city that is fully functioning, and it's more of like a building, but a city in, within itself. And I liked how you drew in so much of the past into this one place.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun creating Marin's. It's sort of like this, you know, bastion of safety and it was a fun place to create for the story to go, because you have this really fragmented existence on the outside. There are some tribes that are very, very primitive and small, and then you have others that have been able to kind of, you know, salvage some of our modern conveniences, and Marin is one of those, and he was a really fun character. I just absolutely loved writing him as a character, because he's a lover of art and a lover of beauty, and just a really interesting character. And I think of all of them, you know, he's the one that maybe is a little bit more of me in him, because I was trained as an artist, as a painter, and so Marin and I are, you know, we have a lot of the same sort of characteristics. But yeah, his city, his stronghold, I would say, is a really kind of important sort of interlude within the story for all the characters.
I like the way that as you have these two people searching for really the same thing, how every time Arya meets somebody new, they're like, you're from the inside? How are you alive? Which is one of the plots that obviously drives the story, because that's the first thing. You wonder if everybody in Reverie was lying about being able to not breathe on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she doesn't have the natural immunities for it, but that is a driving question. It's like, is she going to be able to, will she survive? Will her body be able to withstand this truly sort of shocking experience of being cast out of your home and thrust into a situation that she's completely unprepared for? And so, yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm actually working on the second book right now, and that's definitely a big part of it, because, you know, the worlds start to kind of collide a little bit more, even more so. So you start seeing even more interaction between dwellers and outsiders, and the boundaries, that boundary of inside and outside starts to kind of crumble a little bit. And it's a fun thing to see happen, you know, is not just Arya and Perry anymore, but these worlds are starting to kind of butt up against each other. And there's no longer that issue of actually the walls of Reverie keeping them apart.
Well, we look forward to the second in the trilogy. The name of the book is Under the Never Sky. Veronica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Again, the name of Veronica Rossi's novel is Under the Never Sky. It is published by HarperCollins. For The Roundtable, I'm Katie Britton.